Please welcome Michael Kaplan.
Up until the point that I was engaged to be married, my criminal career was pretty mild. In second grade, the teacher walked in one morning and she said, "Kenny Haynes in the class next door just brought in a bunch of baby ducklings. Who saw?" And the kids at my table raised their hand, so I raised my hand. And she looked at me and said, "Michael, tell everyone what they were like." And this was not what I had signed up for. You know, I just basically wanted the reflected glory of the kids that had seen the ducklings to wash off on me. I didn't want to have to conjure these ducklings out of thin air. So I tried to play it safe by going for, you know, neutral earth tones. And I said, "Well, they were brown," and immediately I could see she was not buying it. So, you know, I played my best card and said, "Well, they were sleeping." And she sent me out of the class. And then later came out and talked to me about, you know, lying and how one shouldn't do that. Okay, but in fifth grade, Inspector Saunders, who was the fire marshal for the area, came to our classroom and gave this enthralling presentation on all the ways that we could die because of our parents' negligence. And then he said that we were going to take a 25-question true or false test on fire safety, and the kid who had the best score would get to go with his or her parents to the fireman's picnic that summer. And this man was so charismatic and deeply scary that I just felt like, yes, I had to go to that picnic. So we took the test, and then we handed it over to the student next to us to be graded, and I got 6 wrong. So there was going to be no way. But in the hubbub afterwards, I subtly changed 5 incorrect T's to nuanced F's and then brought my test up to the teacher with this attitude of, "Hey, I was robbed." And she brought it to Amy Gantman, who had graded my test, who said, "Yeah, okay, maybe she missed all of those." And suddenly I was back in the running. And my name thrillingly went into the fire hat with 3 others as the top score takers. But Robbie Fredericks got picked. I was just a cheater and a falsifier of evidence and had thrown Amy Gantman under the bus in the process. Now, in eighth grade, I was going to an all-boy private school, and there was not only a cafeteria, but there was a snack bar on campus that featured the entire spectrum of Frito-Lay products. And I was just obsessed with food at that age, but you couldn't use cash. You had to go to the student store and, you know, get a meal card that was charged to your parents. And my mom and dad made it very clear that was not happening, that I had a brown sack lunch that I was taking to school each day, and forget about that. But the thing about these meal cards was that they were these cardboard rectangles divided into 9 squares, each one representing a dollar, each one with, you know, increments of 5 cents, so that if you were to spend $1.35, the lady in the snack bar would, you know, click the appropriate 35 cent in the square showing how much you had left on the card. And what I noticed was that some of the rich kids at my school, you know, might buy $5 worth of snacks for them and their friends in one go, which meant that there were all of these unblemished squares on their meal card. And I also noticed where the snack bar ladies were tossing the cards once they were done. So I scooped up a handful and brought them home and got out the razor and the packing tape and just put together an absolutely pristine, virgin meal card that looked like it had been laminated. And for 2 weeks, gorged myself on illegal potato chips. And that's my rap sheet. Okay? I was a cautious, risk-adverse child, by and large, the last person that you would expect to go sneak onto Boo Radley's porch. Really, the last you would expect to walk on the wild side. I might stick my toe in the runoff that came from the wild side after a heavy rain. That was about it, okay? I was not a rebel or a rogue. I was a follower. I was a born follower. I was very comfortable in that role. I did not raise my hand because I wanted to lie about ducks. Everybody around me raised their hand. That seemed like the thing to do, okay? So, years go by. I meet my wife. We leave Los Angeles. We move to Cambria. We decide to get married. We figure out a date, and we figure out a venue, but we don't know who's going to officiate the wedding. Now, Susan at that time was working at a little law office in Morro Bay, and also working there was this guy who was a pastor. He had a congregation in Los Osos, but he also had a law degree, and he was always talking about these really dodgy schemes to avoid paying property tax and avoid paying income tax or ways to maybe get additional money back from the government. So I took to calling him Pastor Shyster. And we thought, well, maybe Pastor Shyster can marry us. And we sort of decided that one Sunday we'd go down to Los Osos and we'd hear him give his sermon, and then we'd get together with him afterwards at his house and kind of plan out the wedding. So that particular Sunday came around, and we are driving down Highway 1 from Cambria to get to Los Osos, just zipping along. There are a lot of cars, but we're all in a big fat hurry, and we're all going, you know, well over 70 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone, and hitting that wonderful part where suddenly here comes the ocean into view, and there's the town of Cayucas in the distance, and a highway patrolman, lights flashing, comes zooming up behind us all and is basically signaling us one after another to pull over. He's going to bust 10 of us in one throw. He's going to write 10 tickets in 30 minutes and then go for like a 2-hour brunch. And I pull over and I turn off the car, and I'm just ready to sit and wait for the punishment I deserve, because that is the way of the Kaplan men. And then it was like I heard a voice going, "Turn around, get out, get out." And actually, it was a voice. It was my fiance. And because I'm a born follower, I started the car, I pulled a fast U-turn, I went back up Highway 1 North, turned off onto Villa Creek Road, went a half a mile in, pulled to the side, lit a cigarette, and waited for the heat to blow over. I should probably explain the cigarette. I'm a companion smoker, which is another way that I'm a born follower. So when I met my wife, she was trying to quit smoking. And when she was trying to quit, I was trying to quit. When she was backsliding, I was backsliding. At that particular moment, we were backsliding. So to review, I had broken the law. I had been caught. I had staged a daring escape. I had gone into hiding. And I was smoking. And I don't have a lot more to this story. It's not like we suddenly saw the error of our ways and went to Pastor Shyster and confessed what we had done and joined his flock and then spent a year in a Rwandan village building an orphanage and telling the elders how to set up really sketchy tax shelters. You know, this is just one of those moments where a button gets pushed and you are not the person that you always thought you were. And you just have to integrate that somehow with your sense of self. I mean, my entire life, I only experienced guilt in its unadulterated form. You know, sort of like the Jewish concentrate version, just add water and feel bad. And suddenly, my sense of guilt is shot through with adrenaline. You know, it's like somebody spiked the guilt, like, you know, like an eggnog. And I realized that, I loved this woman and I wanted to marry this woman and I was prepared to break the law with this woman, which really is a strong foundation for a relationship. So, you know, once we just kind of waited the whole situation out, I started the car up and we got back onto Highway 1, which was now deserted, and we headed down south to Los Osos to plan our nuptials, resisting the urge to make a quick stop along the way and knock off a jewelry store to get our wedding rings.